I want to thank you for your kind invitation to be with you this morning. When I visit faith communities in my role as Executive Director of Pennsylvania Interfaith Power and Light, I am often the only Unitarian Universalist in the room, so it's good to be home. Thank you. And particular thanks to Kent and to Susan for shaping this service together with me. It's a real pleasure to be here. I want to take advantage in some ways of being with fellow Unitarian Universalists today because I think that gives a particular shape to the conversation about care of our common home, as Pope Francis has spoken of it, and the challenges that come with climate change. There's a uniqueness, I believe, both in what Unitarian Universalists bring to this topic and what the planetary challenge brings to Unitarian Universalism. In the end, perhaps there's an opportunity for a transformation of all, for I know that is indeed a key aspect of our faith's tradition, to transform lives, ours, and those with whom we are in relationship. I want to open my reflection this morning with a short reading, and I'll tell you who wrote it and when it was written after I read it. It's from a sermon titled, Lessons from the Sierra Nevada. I believe that if on every Sunday morning before going to church, we could be lifted to a mountain peak and see a horizon line of 600 miles unfolding the copious splendor of the light on such a varied expanse, or if we could look upon a square mile of flowers representing all the species with which the creative spirit embroiders a zone, or if we could be made to realize the distance of the earth from the sun, the light which travels every morning 12 millions of miles a minute to feed and bless us, and which the force of gravitation pervades without intermission to hold our globe calmly in its orbit and on its poise, if we could fairly perceive through our outward senses one or two features of the constant order and glory of nature, our materialistic dullness would be broken. Surprise and joy would be awakened. We should feel that we live amid the play of infinite thought, and the devout spirit would be stimulated so potently that our hearts would naturally mount in praise and prayer. Okay, the fact that an entire paragraph is one sentence, as well as some of those word choices, should clue you into the fact that this wasn't written recently. It's an excerpt from an 1863 sermon written by Thomas Starr King, who was a minister in both the Unitarian and Universalist traditions before our denominational merger, long before. What I hear King saying in that opening is that opening ourselves to the awesomeness and mystery and the teachings of this extraordinary planet on which we live and on which we depend has the power to transform us. Our materialistic dullness would be broken. Surprise and joy would be awakened to turn our heads and hearts so significantly that we will live in new and different ways. Wow. What a different view of transformation this offers than what we're fed as a daily diet by the usual sources. You know what I mean. A steady drumbeat of information and statistics and numbers and facts, fake or not. Not that I'm arguing against sketching reality as reality really is. We need to face the facts, to know the reality of the state of our planetary home in a time of climate change. We need to understand the links to human activities, specifically that the combustion of fossil fuels for energy production, transportation, and agriculture is causing the Earth's atmosphere to heat up at a rapid rate, disrupting the planetary systems upon which we all depend for our very lives, and outstripping our and other species' ability to adapt. That's it in a nutshell. But what's as clear as these facts is that more and more finely detailed information has not, to date at least, led to a transformation of human behavior. In the words of Shirdi Sai Baba, an Indian yogic master, you seek too much information and not enough transformation. Indeed, too much information can actually work against us in powerful ways. A few years ago, the Social Capital Project published a major study of Americans' attitudes and worldviews, especially as it related to the environment and climate change. Their report sought to go beyond the dualities of believe or not believe, and the polarities of liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, libertarian, green. It was an investigation of values and demographics. And perhaps at another time we can try unpacking what language speaks best to whom when it comes to these issues. But tucked into a corner of the report, I found a too brief section on the obstacles each of us face, no matter our demographic markers, in making our way to a path of mobilization and action, indeed, transformation, of taking on the very real crisis of climate change. See where you may land in these descriptions. First, we have environmental fatalism. It's just too little, too late. Though we value and take in accurate information, you and I know the news is not good. It's extraordinary that so much information from far-flung parts of the world is so accessible to us. So we can watch the ice melting in Antarctica, Indonesian rainforests burning, soaring temperatures in Phoenix, all in the flick of a TV remote. But to what end? Does it transform us, or does it shut us down? And if all that news does manage to motivate rather than discourage, it's easy to succumb to another kind of environmental overload. The challenge is just too big and overwhelming. What's the most important thing to do, people ask me all the time. Tell me again, switching light bulbs will help the planet. How? The authors of the study name other ways we resist transformation, and as I read these, I thought they are particularly felt keenly by folks most likely to be found in Unitarian Universalist congregations. There is the specter of environmental sainthood that haunts us, a worry that no matter what we do, we'll never be green enough. And then something the authors dub environmental cognition. It's just plain too hard to wrap our minds around climate change because it isn't a simple cause and effect problem. Environmentalism actually came of age in the era of pollution. Then something could be identified and targeted and cleaned up. But how do you clean up carbon? And the study points to environmental elitism. Working on these issues is fine for those with money and time who are white or urban or professional. But what about everyone who is facing the immediate and pressing problems of merely staying safe, employed, fed, insured, housed? So do any of these feel familiar to you? In my work with PAIPL over the past 2.5 years, I've become convinced that the only way to overcome these obstacles is to start with oneself. Because as we know from countless sources, the only thing we can truly change is our own attitudes, our own behaviors, our own actions. Mindfulness is somewhat of a buzzword these days. But what I like about it in relation to working on climate change is that it offers us a way forward that we actually have control over. Mindfulness is not some wimpy, weak response. Mindfulness is a discipline. It's also a call. Here are some words from Thich Nhat Hanh, written 10 years ago. The bells of mindfulness are calling out to us, he says, trying to wake us up, reminding us to look deeply at our impact on the planet. The bells of mindfulness are sounding all over the earth. We are experiencing floods, droughts, massive wildfires. Sea ice is melting in the Arctic, and hurricanes and heat waves are killing thousands. The forests are fast disappearing. The deserts are growing. Species are becoming extinct every day. And yet we continue to consume, ignoring the ringing bells. All of us know that our beautiful green planet is in danger, he says. Our way of walking on the earth has a great influence on animals and plants, yet we act as if our daily lives have nothing to do with the condition of the world. We are like sleepwalkers, not knowing what we are doing or where we are heading. Whether we can wake up or not depends on whether we can walk mindfully on our Mother Earth. The future of all life, including our own, depends on our mindful steps. So let us pause. Let us listen. May we hear the bells of mindfulness that are sounding all across the planet. So I say to Thich Nhat Hanh, how do we hear those bells of mindfulness? How do we wake up and stay awake? His words call us to practices where we might walk mindfully on the earth. We are called to heal ourselves and thus our connection with earth and all that live upon it. Mindfulness is an antidote to barriers to action, and we are badly in need of that. In her essay, The Sacredness of Earth Day, Gail Staub writes, each conscious earth-friendly act, composting, reusing, recycling, repairing, carpooling, eco-wise shopping, conserving water and energy, is also an act of spiritual mindfulness. It is the degree of mindfulness that we bring to our most ordinary daily acts of sustainability that determines the sacredness of life. Indeed, it is mindfulness that transforms the mundane into the sacred. The recycling bins become daily rounds of earth awareness, the water and energy saved prayers of gratitude, the rice shared, a collective offering to clean fresh air. As an antidote to the addiction of consumerism, mindful stewardship heals the spiritual emptiness at the core of much of modern life. Ultimately, skillful stewardship is a blending of reverence and responsibility. A blend of reverence with responsibility. As a Unitarian Universalist, I say, where do I sign up? How do we begin the shift to see habits or hobbies or chores or must-dos or should-dos as acts of spiritual mindfulness? So here for you today is my recipe for, capital letters here, individuals who want to engage climate change on a daily basis as a spiritual practice of mindfulness. Not quite as long a sentence as Thomas Starr King's. First, choose a practice. Choice is really important. We're much more likely to stick with something we choose than having it thrust upon us. We all know that. Will it be conserving water, composting, picking up litter, using public transit, walking? Try it out. Is it a good fit for you? Will you face it with grumbling and resentment or engagement and curiosity? Can you do it with intention as a routine, not just when you feel like it? Does it hold the potential for new insights, learnings, aha moments? Is it joyful? Now think of the ways you can take your practice and spread it. How is it shareable, teachable, bloggable? Get the word out about what you're doing. Invite others along, or even help them find their own practices. And most important, and do not skip this step, articulate for yourself and for those around you how your practice connects to climate change. What story can you tell about making, if not a dent, at least a nick in your carbon footprint? What's your personal role in making change happen by managing carbon in your own life? Even as we engage in spiritual practices of mindfulness, we still need collective action through policy change, community efforts, political will. But I am convinced that those efforts are more likely to succeed if they emerge from a personal commitment to practice. So why is that? Practices allow us to stay in touch with the challenge of climate change on a tangible, daily basis, so it doesn't get abstract or something we read about in the paper in far-off places or times. It's here, it's now, it's real, just like our practice. Practices keep us honest because we are taking personal responsibility for the immense carbon footprint those of us in the United States have, using a huge percentage of the planet's carbon budget. Practices empower us to speak authentically to policymakers and politicians. We can say, I'm doing what I can. I'm asking you to do what you can too. Practices build social values and norms. To take on a spiritual practice that connects us to Earth and its care and see it as just what we do, not something unusual, has the potential to change the conversation with others who are casting about for what they can do. Practices wake us up. They keep us aware, noticing the world around us in all its glory and its brokenness. And ultimately, practices inspire us to take on more, bigger changes, because as essential as they are, individual practices simply are not enough. They matter, they help, but in order to truly make a difference, we need to work together as communities, and I would say particularly as communities of faith. And here I borrow some language of one of our own, Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams. In his book, Transforming Liberalism, Adams spoke of several different themes of liberal religion, and in them, I find the grounding for congregations' work on climate, and perhaps particularly for Unitarian Universalists. Adams wrote that to be religious means having a particular worldview that draws on certain root metaphors. For Unitarian Universalists, our worldview is embedded in our seventh principle. We are a part of an interdependent web of all existence. A part, not the whole, intimately and intricately connected to all of life. When we recognize this, we can become reflectors and amplifiers of this amazing earth. We offer praise and thanksgiving for its beauty, as well as lament to address our distress at its desecration. To lift up the glory of the world as we have experienced, yes, loved it, with joy and hope, this is no small thing and desperately, hungrily needed. Gail Staub concludes her essay for Earth Day with these words. She says, understanding that our destiny is forever linked with the fate of the earth, that the health of our souls is inextricably related to the health of our planet, is at the heart of stewardship as a spiritual practice. Walking the path of stewardship, we take it one day at a time, just as we do with our spiritual practice. We aspire towards a fresh beginner's mind as we compost, plant trees, shop with green values, conserve, recycle, reuse, and repair. Gently, inexorably, both in our spiritual practice and our stewardship, they are changing us and changing our world. May this moment in time, urgent, precious, grant us an opening for transformation of ourselves, of one another, of Earth. May it be so, and blessed be.